perhaps the most startling words in Atul Gawande's book, Complications, appear in the first few pages when he reminds us that doctors are fundamentally human. Dr. Gawande?
Usually when we think about medicine and its remarkable abilities, what comes to mind is the science and all it has given us to fight sickness and misery, the tests, the machines, the drugs, the procedures. And without question, these are at the center of virtually everything medicine achieves. But we rarely see how it all actually works. You have a cough that won't go away, and then it's not science you call upon, but a doctor. A doctor with good days and bad days. A doctor with a weird laugh and a bad haircut. A doctor with three other patients to see, and inevitably gaps in what he knows and skills he's still trying to learn.
As the subtitle reads, these are indeed a surgeon's notes on an imperfect science. Atul Gawande joins us from the studios of WGBH in Boston. Dr. Gawande is a surgical resident at a hospital in the area and a staff writer for Science and Medicine for The New Yorker magazine. Dr. Gawande, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
And what do your colleagues think when you talk that way? Nobody says be careful when you scrub in because Gawande's on the operating team, and if you make a mistake, it winds up in one of his books.
There are constant jokes about needing a metal detector to make sure I don't have any pens on me when I go to the operating room. But in truth, the lucky thing to me is that I've been in a place that has been willing to have these ideas put out there, and it seems like it's opened a little window where discussions that don't even occur between doctors and patients can be started and thought about.
You open the book with a vignette on yourself, which I guess reminds us of the fact that with so many new procedures being developed, there is a mathematical chance that the doctor who is performing a procedure on you has just learned how to do it.
Right. Right. This was an insertion of a central line.
Yeah.
You know, I was a fresh resident out of medical school a few weeks, and it is one of the basic procedures that happen in a hospital. You have to thread an intravenous line into someone, and it's done hundreds of times a day everywhere. And there's always your first time to take that giant needle and actually imagine putting it into somebody's chest and getting it in the right place, not injuring the lung. It took me 4 failures at trying this before I finally had a patient who I succeeded in getting it in with. And that process of learning how to do it is extremely uncomfortable for us in medicine, in part because
the patient, I should think.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the reality of medicine. It's part of what makes it difficult and also interesting and worthwhile. And there's a deep moral dilemma in the reality that it's patients we practice upon.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Gawande, there have been a couple of other surgeons who have talked about the awe they feel when cutting into any human body under any circumstance. Is it always hard to have that sense of awe when you carve through some just awful-looking stuff?
Yes, absolutely. You know, there are moments where you have that awe, where you see something in a completely new way. But I have to say that a lot of medicine is routine, even surgery and opening up patients. You go to the operating room, you pick out some CDs to put the tunes on, you...
What do you listen to?
What do I listen to?
Yeah, what do you like?
Well, I'm in the operating room. It's interesting. Music choice is more of a cultural matter. I once brought the Violent Femmes to the operating room. That lasted about 2 minutes.
I don't know how I'd feel if I was being put under. And
you have a wide variety of tastes in the operating room, and I find that Van Morrison is the universally, generationally appropriate music for the operating room.
That's quite an endorsement.
Yes.
9 out of 10 surgeons prefer Van Morrison in their operating chambers.
That's right.
Well, I'm sorry. So I didn't mean to distract you, but there you are listening to Van Morrison and about to carve into some of us.
Yes, and much of it is routine. You know, 97% of the time, everything goes as you expect it to. And there's a great thrill, actually, in the idea that you're able to open people up and actually do something that under most circumstances would be considered assault and make them better for it. But it's those 2 or 3% where things can become terrifying or mm-hmm. just take a turn for the unexpected, that you're either can catch you unexpectedly or can simply remind you of how mysterious things still are in medicine. Mm-hmm.
But you have descriptions in the book where you talk about, I believe you say, just glistening globs of fat, which we all have to one degree or another, don't we?
Well, you know, I wanted people to be able to see what happens. Not only what happens, what things look like, what things smell like and feel like, because what I wanted people to do was imagine that they were surgeons themselves.
Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, you have a particularly startling story in the book about a hunch, I think you even used that word, that you had, that I think we can fairly say led to a young woman being able to hold onto her leg.
Yes, I had a 23-year-old woman come into our emergency room with a red infection of her leg, and it looked like an ordinary skin infection, but for some reason, just looking at it, my stomach dropped, and what I thought it was a disease called necrotizing fasciitis, or flesh-eating bacteria, as the tabloids call it, and it's a disease that is extremely rare and can climb very rapidly through your tissues, and it takes up to 70% of the people's lives who are infected by it. Now, this occurs 1,000 cases a year. There are 3 million skin infections a year, and they don't look any different. Yeah. For some reason, I thought this could be it.
She thought that she might have some particular form of poison ivy or something like that.
Yeah, not much more than that. She'd been at a wedding the weekend before and danced with her shoes off and had a little redness of her leg the following day, and then it was up to her calf the day after that and came into the emergency room after a course of oral antibiotics had failed, mm-hmm. and thought she was just coming in for some intravenous antibiotics. Mm-hmm.
Now, we should explain that the immediate recommended treatment, because you are fighting the clock, literally a matter of hours, if not minutes, would be to perform an amputation, wouldn't it?
That's right. If she had necrotizing fasciitis, the proper treatment involves amputation in most instances. So we opened the whole leg, and the tissues underneath were gray and foul, and we needed to take almost all the muscles of her leg, and she came through. She survived it. She is now not only working and getting married soon, but she runs every day.
She runs every day. Her muscles were, a lot of her musculature was taken, wasn't it?
That's right. She ended up having skin grafts, but we were able to preserve some of the muscles at the back of her leg, and she's able to jog a mile a day.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's an instance in which the intuition that you had induced you to do the right thing. There are instances where somebody's hunch is wrong, isn't it?
Absolutely. Some instances I've wrote about in the book where my own hunches were wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's the core state of medicine. For all our technology and all our machines and the devices you hear about, the reality of medicine is still uncertainty.
Dr. Gawande, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Speaking from Boston, Dr. Atul Gawande, who writes for The New Yorker magazine. He is a surgical resident in Boston, and his new book is Complications, A Surgeon's Notes on an Imperfect Science.